Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, April 24th, 2015. Members of the National Alliance of Opposition Political Parties say security forces have surrounded the house of Lamakol and that they are afraid for his life.
This is a political motivated move directed against the leadership of the National Alliance, and we call upon the government to stand out to its responsibility and order these forces to withdraw.
And Western Bahr al-Ghazal politicians criticize the move by the State Assembly to extend the tenure of governors and the State Assembly for 3 years.
What has happened shows the beginning of chaos and a lack of rule of law in which governors will be acting as the presidents of their own states.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A South Sudan opposition leader says he is afraid for his life after members of the country's security forces surrounded his house for the second day. Lamakol says the action of the security forces violates his constitutional rights. He says the government has not given him any reasons for the heavy security presence around his house.
This is what is happening. They came, surrounded the house. He stayed the whole night without talking to anybody. So up to now, we don't know what were their mission.
And are you able to get out of the house?
No.
Did you try to get out of the house? But
People can come in and get out.
And do they talk to people who come in to your house?
No, they don't.
Have you tried to talk to the government and especially the Ministry of Security or the head of the National Security to explain why your house is surrounded by security personnel?
Yeah, I did that last night. I phoned the Minister of Security and he told me that he will check with his directors. But then he didn't come back. This morning I rang him again, but he didn't pick up the telephone.
And are you scared?
No, I've never been scared in my life. But of course, as a human being, you can be concerned. You can feel some fear as a human being. But the scary, you know, is another stage.
Are the people who have surrounded your house armed? Are they having guns? Or what kind of people are they? Can you describe to me how they look like?
They do. Well, they are southern to the knees. They carry guns and they are in cars.
Are they in a military uniform, or what kind of uniform are they putting on?
Yeah, they are in uniform, definitely.
And from their uniform, could you tell which kind of section of the military or police they belong to?
Yeah, we know where they belong to. They are part of the external security.
You have been very vocal since the fighting started in 2013. Do you think this has connection to some of the statements you have been making?
Well, I don't want to speculate. I want to give the government the benefit of the doubt so that we hear from them what is the motive behind this action.
Will you seek legal avenues to settle this out in case they don't leave your house today?
Well, there have been many things that are not legal. You know, we were prevented from traveling outside South Sudan since September, so nobody has yet raised any legal issue out of it. So there are many things that are illegal. It depends on which one is really damaging.
How about your party members? Are they communicating with you and what are they doing?
They held a press conference today to denounce such a move, you know, and call on the government to respect the Bill of Rights that it has committed itself to respect it.
I know that you and President Kiir and the other political leaders in the country were in one force during the South Sudan's 21 years of fighting, and I'm sure you speak to each other. Have you notified President Kiir about this incident?
Well, he's not in the country in the first place. And secondly, we want to do things through the correct channels. Well, we start with the minister first, and then if he solves the problem, then that is it. If not, we seek other higher authority.
You're saying President Kiir is not in the country. Where is he?
He's in Turkey.
If you're given an opportunity to speak directly to the leaders of the security in the country, what would you tell them?
We will just tell them one simple thing, that security is for the protection of all the citizens of South Sudan. And you must apply the law equally for all. Because today, you may be the one who is applying the law. Next day, you may be at the receiving end. So it is better to be fair.
That's Dr. Lamakol, leader of the Alliance of Political Parties, speaking to me from Juba. An umbrella group of South Sudanese opposition political parties say Lamakol may have been placed under house arrest, but the government is firmly denying the allegations. Charlton Doki reports for VOA from Juba.
Martin Aligo Abe is the National Alliance Umbrella Group's Secretary General. In a statement read out to reporters, Aligo says security officials showed up outside Lamakol's house last night. In a statement, Aligo says the security personnel
besieged the house of Dr. Lamakol Ajawin, the chairman of the SPLM-DC and the current chairman of the National Alliance, and sealed off the roads leading to his house. They were on four vehicles. These security operatives are still there up to the time of writing.
Aligo says the action by the security forces is a violation of Akol's individual freedoms. Stewart Soroba Budia is deputy chairman of the opposition United Democratic Party. He says he has heard reports that the soldiers who surrounded Akol's house are heavily armed.
We don't know what is taking place, but practically these people are there. The cars are still there. We don't know what they are there for, but it could be better if the government could explain exactly what is taking place, because the security is under the government. Therefore, the next step is that we want to see to it that the government removes those people.
Information Minister Michael Makwe-Lueth denies the government has anything to do with the heavy security presence outside Akol's house.
Well, in the first place, you are informing me now that he's under house arrest. I don't know if he's under house arrest. He's a free citizen, and if he claims to be under house arrest, that is a different thing. Why should we be put under house arrest if we want to arrest him? I will take him to the prison.
Aligo is calling on the government to order an end to the security siege outside Akol's home.
This is a political motivated move directed against the leadership of the National Alliance, and we call upon the government to stand out to its responsibility and order these forces to withdraw forthwith. The government must also ensure that the basic freedom, especially the freedom of expression of the association, are guaranteed to all South Sudanese.
Aligo says the heavy presence of soldiers outside Akol's house is a violation of South Sudan's transitional constitution. He says it's not the first time the government has trampled on the rights of opposition politicians, including Akol.
It is worth mentioning that the government has been clamping down on the rights of the political parties constituting the National Alliance. Leaders of the National Alliance are not allowed to travel abroad and on other parts of the country. What democracy are we talking about? If the government has anything against anybody, it must follow the due process of the law.
Last September, the government barred Akol from traveling to Addis Ababa to participate in what was supposed to be an inclusive session of peace talks for South Sudan. In recent weeks, Akol has criticized both President Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar for lacking the political will to make the compromises necessary to reach a final peace agreement in the ongoing peace process that is being led by regional bloc IGAD. Akol's party, the SPLM-DC, opposed government plans to hold elections in June this year. And when the government backpedaled and extended its mandate by 3 years, Akol opposed that move too. Makwei says Akol is just seeking attention.
These are his usual claims, because he has his own problems, and he wants to create a situation so that he feels that he's being harassed. If we want to arrest him, nobody can stop us from arresting him. Why should he be put under house arrest? He's a normal citizen who can be arrested like others. Doesn't enjoy any immunity over anything.
For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
Still on issues of politics, in Western Bahr al-Ghazal state, lawmakers voted yesterday to amend the state constitution and extend their terms in office and the tenure of the state governor by 3 years. Today, they are coming under fire for the move from politicians, local chiefs and civil society groups. Dimo Silva has this report from WOW.
One of the main complaints civil society groups and local politicians have is that state lawmakers amended the constitution without consulting voters. Juma Zakaria Deng is the state secretary for the United Democratic Salvation Forum Mainstream, or UDFM, a political party group. He says if every state assembly decided to unilaterally change its constitution, there would be a breakdown in the political order in South Sudan.
My opinion is that what has happened shows the beginning of chaos and a lack of rule of law in which governors will be acting as the presidents of their own states.
Stephen Robot is the state coordinator for the Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, or CEPO. He says the lawmakers and governor forgot a key democratic principle when they bypassed voters and amended the constitution.
Be it a governor, be it an MP, it's not you who is there. It is people who nominated you, people who vote for you to go there. You are representing them. So whatever you're doing, it should really be reflecting what common man on the ground needs. So issue here comes. Now, this extension meant for what? Especially at the state level. Look at the other angle. Is it going to be like inclusive government where the other political party also they are going to join in? Or which kind of procedure are they going to use?
Women's Organization for Training and Promotion member Linda Ferdinand says state lawmakers seem to have extended their and the governor's tenure just because the same was done at the national level. She says the state officials should have spelled out clearly to voters why they need 3 more years in office and what they plan to achieve during that time. Then the citizens could have been part of the decision process.
There should be consultations with the citizens on the extension of mandates, and if it is agreed upon, the government should give priority as to what to do during this period. Citizens are the ones to say whether or not the government should be extended. People should have their views, and the government should be held accountable.
Chief Joseph Stephen Fuga says lawmakers should have consulted their constituents on an important change like this one. But members of the State Assembly appear to be turning a deaf ear to the complaints. They are set to review the amendment of the state constitution and come up with a final decision on the tenure extensions in the coming weeks. Maria Nyibong is the State Assembly Speaker. He says the Assembly needs to pass the extension quickly to avoid a leadership vacuum in the state. The terms of lawmakers and the governor of Western Bahr al-Ghazal are due to expire in July. Governor Rizik Zakaria Hassan is widely expected to endorse the amendment to the state constitution to allow himself and the state's 49 members of parliament to stay in office until 2018. For VOA, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio, reporting in WOW.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, MSF workers go on strike. Find out why after this break.
On Thursday, April 30th, VOA hosts a town hall-style meeting to discuss the South Sudan peace process. Moderator John Tanza and VOA's panel of guests will discuss what has been the role of the media, the involvement of the international community, how the peace process was conducted, and has it been inclusive enough? Join us for this event live on April 30th from 1800 to 1930 UTC by visiting voanews.com/South Sudan and clicking on the live web link. We welcome your participation with comments and questions. Email us at southsudan@voanews.com or you can tweet at VOA South Sudan.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Which do you prefer, locally made clothing or foreign made clothing, and why?
Local, because nowadays we have all indulged ourselves into foreign clothing, leaving our local clothing behind. So for me, I will patronize in the local made.
I prefer foreign-made clothing because you can just pick it up and wait. You can't get a ready-made, locally-made clothing like that. But the foreign-made, you can just walk into any clothing shop and get your clothes.
Right now, I don't see locally-made clothes. If they are there, maybe I have no idea. But in most cases, what we buy are these clothes from foreign countries. These ones that are packed in, we call them bell, and then others are these ones that are made in China and then transported. But I prefer buying something that I can afford.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Security forces have intervened to break up a strike by hundreds of employees of Medicines Sans Frontières, or MSF, in northern Bahr el Ghazal state. Around 300 local employees of MSF walked off the job at the main hospital in Awil yesterday to protest what they say are poor working conditions. Abraham Agot has the story from the state capital, Awil.
The workers accuse MSF of turning a blind eye to what they call poor working conditions, including long working hours and low pay. They also say they want to be paid in US dollars instead of the South Sudanese pounds, which has depreciated sharply in recent months. Jacob Dengatem is an nurse aide at MSF's field office in Awil.
The reason why we strike is a persistent complaint that has been down for quite a number of years. We try to keep pushing those complaints to MSF, and MSF doesn't respond positively. We went even up to the Labour Ministry, we discussed with them. The Labour said we have right that we can be paid in hard currency, and that we have to work normal working hours as people used to do all over the world, and also have to increase our salary.
Akol says the staff have tried to resolve the problem, but MSF seems to be taking no action. Victor Akech works with MSF as an operating theatre technician. He says an MSF project coordinator, or PC, accused him of instigating the work stoppage and said he could lose his job over it.
He says, now more I will bring for you as PLA soldiers, I'll bring for you national security. And you will see how thing will happen. I say, this thing, you should not thread us on that because it is our right and you should not take it as an individual problem. You need to understand that it is only the staff who say this and we say nothing to them. We say the feedback is this and they say if this, that is the feedback, we are not working. Simple like that. Why do you take it as a personal problem? So that was the threat from Fisi and I was worried about my life.
Efforts to reach the MSF for comment were unsuccessful. The State Ministry of Health and police officials were also not available for comment. A handful of government workers were on duty at the hospital in Awil to provide essential services. MSF has been operating in northern Bahr el Ghazal state since 2000. The International Medical Aid NGO is one of the main employers in the state. For VOA News, I'm Abraham Agoth reporting in Awil.
Today is the first day of World Immunization Week. To mark the week in South Sudan, UNICEF and health officials are teaming up to vaccinate a group of people who have difficulty getting good preventive health care. That group is internally displaced persons who are living in UN camps. Mungume Debs Rakarinj went to a camp in Juba to see the vaccination effort in action.
One morning this week, 21-year-old Nyakur Toch woke up to the sound of shouting in the UN camp for internally displaced persons, or IDPs in Juba, where she has been living for the past 6 months. But this shouting was a little different. Someone with a megaphone was calling her to come with her child to the nearest immunization center. Toch took the advice, but she envisages problems.
I've been informed that immunizing my children is very good, and I would like to immunize my children always, but I don't know how to read. If they write on my chart when I should report back to the center, I will not be able to understand that.
Toch lives with her baby daughter, Nyakao Lonyi, in a plastic tent donated by a relief agency. The team of vaccinators is trying to make it as easy as possible for parents to have their children immunized, even in the difficult living conditions in the UN camps for IDPs. Trochi's baby has already had several vaccinations. John Paul Guy is one of the medical professionals giving vaccines.
The foreign, they are not bringing the children to the center. We tell them to bring the children, they are not bringing. And we have been in the center there, so the baby will not come. So it means many children will miss the drug, so the vaccine, I mean. So we come to them door to door.
The World Health Organization says that in 2013, nearly 22 million infants around the world missed out on routine vaccines against preventable illness, including diphtheria, whooping cough, and tetanus. Many of the infants who have not been vaccinated are in poor countries. During World Immunization Week, WHO wants to close this immunization gap by launching vaccination campaigns like the one at the UN camp in Juba and by increasing public awareness of the need to have children vaccinated. Along with house-to-house outreach at the UN camp in Juba, people are coming to immunization centers inside the IDP camp to get potentially life-saving shots. Mary Nyarek, a mother of four, has brought two of her children to a center to be vaccinated. 8-week-old Ngawal Joseph winces slightly as a health worker squeezes drops of polio vaccine into the infant's mouth. Another health official takes notes on Ngawal's immunization card.
We bring our children here so that they are immunized, so they don't get resistance from diseases. It makes them healthy. They get injected so they don't get measles. I'm glad my children have been immunized.
Mary has been bringing Ngawal to this center to be vaccinated almost since the day the baby was born. In developed countries, infants are routinely immunized in the first few months of life against preventable diseases, including tetanus, diphtheria, whooping cough, polio, and pneumococcal disease. But in countries like South Sudan, lack of funding and continuous electric power to allow vaccines to be refrigerated, poor infrastructure, and a shortage of skilled vaccinators make it difficult, if not impossible, to provide ample immunization coverage. Often, those who need vaccinations the most are unable to get them because they live in remote areas with no electricity. UNICEF polio immunization specialist Dar es Salaam says more than 16 months of conflict has only made it more difficult to vaccinate South Sudanese children.
There is a wide gap in South Sudan, unfortunately. We see that under 35% of children complete full immunisation. That means against all those preventable diseases. So to close that gap between fully immunised and those not being immunised is a big task, because we're looking at almost 70% of children who are not getting fully immunised.
Balloon is hopeful that efforts such as those being rolled out during World Immunization Week will help to bridge the so-called immunization gap and educate people about how the simple act of bringing their children to a health center for a shot can help to protect them. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
And finally, Malawi is bringing home hundreds of its citizens affected by xenophobic violence in South Africa. At least two Malawians have been killed and hundreds displaced by the violence. Lamek Masina has this report from Johannesburg. We are experiencing some technical difficulties here in the studio, but we'll be back with that story from Malawi. Well, that report from Malawi, we're not able to bring it back to you, but we have some headline news with our editor, Karen Zaivo.
Thank you, John. Around 10,000 people from the East African nation of Burundi have crossed into neighboring Rwanda amid threats of violence ahead of elections. Many of the people fleeing Burundi say they have been intimidated by thugs who support President Pierre Nkurunziza, who may seek a third term. The European Union says it is doubling emergency aid to Italy, Greece, and Malta, which are bearing the brunt of the massive influx of migrants coming across the Mediterranean. The new amount of aid will be 50 million euros a year. EU leaders also pledged ships, aircraft, and equipment to save lives in the Mediterranean after the deaths at sea of more than 1,300 migrants over the past 3 weeks. And more than 100 humanitarian groups are urging the African Union's human rights body to call on South Africa to protect foreigners living in the country. 7 people have died this month in anti-immigrant violence in Johannesburg and the coastal city of Durban. The violence has mainly targeted migrants from other African nations, according to South African officials. And those are today's headlines. I'm Karen Zeitvogel.
Thanks, Karen. And that brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Lingala Ya Yesu by Pitson.
Don't get confused. Ni le grand president Pitson president yake.
Imekuwa muda sasa baba sijakuimbia Lingala baba. Nimekuwa nikijishughulisha na marege na maraga. My blues zikafanya mimi nkalala. Sasa nimeamoka baba naimba Lingala. Waliniambia Lingala poa nifunge mshipi juu ya tumbo. Wakani ambia Lingala poa nionge katikati ya wimbo eti
naongea sina kitu kusema.
Mimi nasema Lingala ya Yesu haikuangi complicated. Ukipewa kagitatu ukipewa kagitatu unainua mikono juu unasifu ya tutu.
Lingala ya Yesu wangu
listening to Pitson with the song Lingala Ya Yesu. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and have a peaceful weekend. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.